sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And my question for you today is, how do you teach your kids about sex? I know this is a tough one for parents and for prospective parents because we've been so suppressed in our culture. Most people don't really know how to talk about sex. Actually, they don't even talk about sex with their partners. They don't say what they like. They don't say what they don't like. Mostly people sort of bear sex with no conversation. And then they read things like Cosmo or they see things on the Playboy channel, but that doesn't necessarily bring them any closer to being able to discuss their sexuality and their needs. And then they have kids. And the same silent people who can't even talk to their partners now try to figure out how to talk to their kids about sex. This is quite a topic. So today, my show is about kids and sex, talking to your kids about sex, how to do it, when's the time to do it, what do you even talk to them about. And my guest today is an expert at that. His name is Craig Hallenstein, and he's a psychologist, a writer, a father of five, and he has a weekly blog called kidsandsexblog.com where he offers sex-positive guidance to parents on how to raise kids to be sexually healthy adults. What a concept! Craig, thanks for joining me. I am thrilled to know you and thrilled to have stumbled upon you on the internet.
Thank you, Lori. Actually, it's six. I found another one last week.
You're kidding me. You have a sixth child that you just found out about?
I'm kidding.
Oh.
They're like weeds, right? I mean, they pop up all over.
Well, I don't actually have any children, so your five are good for me. You know what I mean?
I'm into sharing.
This, to me, that you talk about kids and sex, to me, is unique because most people don't. This is kind of like one of those taboo subjects. Mm-hmm. People never learn how to address the real straight sexuality, sensuality, whatever the lessons are with their children. They ignore it. They bypass it and they hope for the best. Oh, or they hope that they'll learn it in school, which we know they don't. So how did you get into this?
Well, you said at the beginning that, you know, it's difficult and it's scary. We don't even talk to our partners and all of a sudden there are kids there. And it was the same thing for me. I had actually gone to school at California School of Professional Psychology, doing my doctorate work out there. And I was studying under Harold Bissell, who is a wonderful psychologist who wrote a book in the early 70s called The Parent Book. And I was one of Harold's young disciples, and we went out on the road, and we were doing parent training and teacher training. And so I thought I knew a few things about being a good parent, even though I wasn't a parent yet. But once I became a parent, and all of a sudden I had kids, and I knew that the talk was coming up, and I just froze. You know, what am I going to talk about? My father didn't do a good job with me, and what am I going to do?
And so you got inspired to do something to take this matter on and to inform other parents, yeah?
Right. I knew it had to happen, and it was looming. And about that same time, I started taking sexuality workshops, beginning with the Human Awareness Institute, and then I was involved with Kwadoshka and Body Electric and taking these workshops around the country. And I was noticing that there was wonderful work going on in the workshops, but everyone who was there had to be over the age of 40, and they were mostly working on all of their sexual traumas. And I thought, you know, this is information that should be given to kids, because if kids took part in these workshops, they wouldn't have sexual traumas that they'd have to work out 20 years later. So both of those things happened at the same time. I had kids that were 2, 3, 4, 5, and I'm thinking, I've got to be talking to them about sex. And then I'm thinking, there's all this wonderful sexual information available that I'm starting to experience myself, and I'm wanting to take it home to the kids. So I just jumped in with both feet and stumbled around and began to realize that we can have some fun with this stuff. It's not heavy at all. We're having fun at these workshops. Let's have fun sharing the same information with kids.
That's so great. I really commend you. And I work with kids as well. I work with teenagers pretty much, and their parents are always so glad to drop them off, you know, and have somebody like me talk to them about it. And they're easy. They love the information. They want to know about their bodies. So I'm so glad that you're doing this. As I said before, I was thrilled to find you on the internet. So let's talk a little bit about, for starters, like what kind of sex education you received as a kid, because I certainly didn't receive any good information or even in a timely manner. Like, my mother was just too late. My older cousin beat her to it. He told me everything he knew, which wasn't that much, but it was actually more than my mother told me.
How much of it was right?
Well, I mean, it was the basics. He said, basically, you know, a man and a woman get together and the man puts his penis into a woman's vagina, and that's how you make a baby. I mean, that's basically, that was the basics of what he told me.
And you believed that? That's crazy.
Well, it sounded gross. You know, it was like, what? But then, I mean, and then my, you know, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years later that my mother sat down to have a talk with me, and I can't, I mean, what she said to me was kind of so irrelevant that I don't feel it may, I actually looked at her and I said, you're too late.
Yeah, good.
So, I went about exploring things on my own. I mean, and I imagine that so did everybody else that I know, pretty much. You know, maybe 99% of the people who actually have sex and have children explore on their own. They don't get any sex education because no one's providing it except you.
Well, that was certainly true for our generation. I mean, our sex education was self-directed. We just went out and got the information that we felt that we needed, but it wasn't from our parents. I at least got the one big talk from my dad, and I only remember a couple of things from that. One was how nervous he was. He was sitting across from me, and he was shaking, and I was a little tense myself knowing what was coming, but I felt so bad for him, and he really tried his best, and he did his best, but... And the one thing of everything that he talked about, the one thing that I remembered that he said was, if you should happen to get hard, don't think about it and don't touch it, and eventually it'll go down. Betty Dodson, are you listening? And what I found out on my own was, if I thought about it and touched it all the time, it would also eventually go down. And I much preferred my approach. So, but that was the one big talk. And then we didn't talk. He didn't bring up sex again for 6 years. And this is kind of a funny story. I came home from my first semester in college over Christmas break. And I walked into the kitchen one morning and I heard this voice say, but if you have to do it, at least use a condom. And I'm like this conversation was continuing, only there was this 6 year gap. And I looked around to see where the voice was coming from, and I saw the stream of ashes coming down from the ceiling. My dad was painting the ceiling. He was up on a ladder with a paintbrush in one hand and a cigarette, lit cigarette, in the other. And I just started laughing. It was like, you know, it's a little late, like you said, irrelevant.
Yeah.
And then he started laughing, and we were just laughing hysterically. And finally my dad said, "I suppose it's too late for your brother, too."
And how much younger than you was your brother?
3 years.
And I have a quick question. Had you already had sex by that time?
No, I still had maybe 6 months to go.
I got it.
But my younger brother had been sexual, I think, for a couple of years already. He was away.
So your father took 6 years to gain the gumption to tell you about condoms.
It took 6 years for him to finish the sentence. It was pretty amazing. But let's go back.
Wait a minute. I actually do want to tell you that my father, when I was a freshman in college, my father and I were walking on the beach, and he said to me one day out of nowhere, "I just want to let you know that sex isn't the best thing in the world, and it's not the worst thing in the world. If you decide to have it with someone, make sure it's a really good experience, and don't make it the end-all be-all, and don't reduce it down to nothing. It's right in there with life, and be responsible. Like, the only thing you need to know is you could get pregnant as a result of having sex with someone, and you should always keep that in mind."
Mm-hmm.
So that was very helpful, and when I got home, I told my mother that he said that, and she threw a pot and pan at him.
No.
So just, you know, that sticks in my memory. Well, we're actually going to stop for a second here. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you questions about really how people should start talking to their kids about sex. Mm-hmm. and being really the kind of parents that provide something for kids in the area of sex and sensuality and happiness, by the way. And we'll find out how people listening can get really educated on what they need to do to not have 6 year gaps in talking about it and to actually know that their kids are empowered with information. So, Craig, thanks. We'll be right back. You're listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers, and I'm speaking with Craig Hallenstein, who is a psychologist, a writer, a father of five, and he writes a regular blog called KidsAndSexBlog.com, and you can find out more there. But, of course, you'll find out more here on the show. So stay tuned.
How would you like to lose up to a pound a day? With no exercise required, with no hunger, without being on a restrictive diet for the rest of your life, and no unpleasant side effects. If this appeals to you, you want homeopathic HCG. How do you get that? You go to hormonenurse.com. That's HORMONE, nurse.com. There you can find out about HCG and this amazing diet. It's a diet I've used, and I've lost an amazing amount of weight. I'm back to my college size. Plus, you'll find out about hormones, bioidentical hormones. Perhaps you need that too. You need it maybe for sleep, for sexual passion again, your libido. Go to hormonenurse.com.
You're listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers. And my question for you today is, if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, or possibly you know a woman who could use some zest and zing, a lot of women say that their feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally or as often as they would like. So today I want to tell you a little bit about Zestra. Zestra was developed to provide a much-needed option for all women to feel more sexually satisfied. Zestra was created as a safe, patented blend of botanical oils and extracts. It was formed to help women have increased sexual sensations. It comes in convenient single-dose personal packets, and each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts fresh and safe from light. Zestra starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes, and they call the initial sensations the Zestra rush. And these effects tend to peak at around 10 minutes and can last up to 45 minutes. Also, the great news is that Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. It's my feeling that all women deserve sexual satisfaction, and Zestra is the breakthrough women can use to really get the kind of arousal and feelings that they want during sex. For more information about Zestra, phone 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please say that you heard about Zestra from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show. So we're back now with Craig Hallenstein, and we're talking about how you talk to kids about sex that makes a difference for the kids. Not just saying, oh, by the way, there's this thing, sex, or saying what Craig and I just discussed our parents did. So, Craig, how really do you go about talking to kids about sex? When should you start? Like, what age?
Start when they're still inside, before they're born. Just, you know, start talking at your belly and talk about sex and how exciting it is and how much you're going to love it. And I doubt if the fetus will hear much of that or make much sense of it, but it's great practice for you. And that's the time to get started. Start right at the beginning and start using sexual words and terms to become comfortable with talking about sex. And then when the baby's born, then you can really go at it.
What you're saying is to start talking about sex like it's a natural thing.
Sure.
Which it is.
I mean, in the same conversation, you might mention how good Italian food is and, you know, and just be enthusiastic. We've put sex up on the shelf. We've made it a separate category, and we've got to be able to bring it back and just talk about it like it's anything else. And I think parents need to always lead with enthusiasm. There's just too much. When we do talk about sex now in sexual conversations, a lot of sex education is fear-based. And I don't think that we want to lead with fear. I think we want to lead with a sense of enthusiasm.
But that would mean that the parents would have to have a breakthrough. I mean, what you're prescribing actually makes complete sense, and it's actually common sense. It's beyond transformation. It's common sense. However, it would seem from what you're advocating here that parents would need to have a transformation or a breakthrough in their own attitudes because they'd need to talk to each other.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, a parent has to decide how they feel about sex. And if you're not enthusiastic about sex, if you're carrying around traumas and frankly, you don't like sex, I think as a parent, you have some choices to make. One is you might want to get that fixed and get back on a sexual track where you enjoy sex and feel positive about it and can come from that place when you talk to your kids. Or you can choose to have the feelings you have, but recognize that you want kids to gain an enthusiastic sense about sexuality, and then it's time to turn to someone else to educate your kids. But I certainly would recommend for most parents to jump in to this themselves, because I think we miss a lot. I just had so much fun with my five kids, once I got into the groove of talking about sex, it just opened up worlds with us. And it feels like there's nothing that I can't talk to my kids about.
I'm sure that you're really rare. Well, I'm sure because I work with parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been teaching sacred sexuality since 1998. And I deal with people who are so uptight. So I've had people in my class who couldn't even say the word sex. They spelled it out. You know, like when you're spelling it out for the kids. You know, I came here to talk about S-E-X. So, you know, we're asking for what seems like it should be a natural progression in life, and yet it's such a tall order.
I know.
Well, for people.
You know, here are a few misconceptions that parents have. One is that you wait until puberty and then you have one big talk. And no, you have to start right up front and start talking about our bodies. And, you know, if you're comfortable sitting down, open a picture book. There are wonderful picture books about sex geared toward kids. And look at the pictures and laugh with your kids. I did this when my kids were like 4 and 5 years old, and we'd snuggle on the couch and we'd look at picture books about sex, and the kids would laugh. They'd point and laugh and got the biggest kick out of it. And that just built a real positive base. So you can't wait. It's got to be an ongoing discussion that lasts right into college. I got a call one night on the phone from one of my kids asking some pretty in-depth sexual questions. And I'm fielding these at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's like, yeah, but we can talk about this stuff because we always had.
So it's an honor. It's actually an honor that your kid would call you at 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's what it felt like.
I mean, most kids, if they're calling their parents at 2 o'clock in the morning, they're in some kind of trouble with the police. And
yeah.
Your kid is calling you at 2 o'clock in the morning and saying, you know, how do I do this sexual maneuver or whatever your kid was saying? Like,
right.
What a privilege for you to be able to intervene with your child who's no longer a child, who's just about to have some kind of a rite of passage.
I have another daughter who, when she was either a senior in high school or just left for college, came to me and said, you know how we were always so open and in our talk about sex? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, all my girlfriends come to me with their sexual questions. And I thought that was terrific, because when you break this cycle, it's not only good from a generational standpoint with your own family, but it spreads out into the community.
Yeah, your daughter became the knowledgeable one or the sage about this stuff for all these other girls. It kind of just reminded me when I was in high school, I was the one who always wanted to know everything about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know who to ask because my parents clearly didn't know anything. So I would ask the boys, older boys,
mm-hmm.
questions about things I heard. And then I would run to the girls' locker room and tell everyone what I just heard.
And you're still doing that, Lori.
Right, I'm doing it in much larger percentages and dosage now. I do it to 100,000 plus people every week.
Bigger locker room.
Yeah, much bigger locker room. But it's so important. I have this question for you about, I want to go back to any other misconceptions parents have. But before we do that, I have this question, since you have girls. What are the genders of your kids? You have 5 kids, and what are they?
No, let me think for a minute. No, I'm kidding. 3 girls and 2 boys.
Okay, so my question for you, as being a man with 3 daughters, I have noticed that men, when they have daughters, do this thing. Like, as soon as the daughters reach puberty, the fathers become somewhat distant because they don't want to get turned on, or perhaps they are turned on to their own daughters. So they kind of push their daughters away a little bit. I've talked to many, many women over the years who have told me that at the time they reached puberty, their father stopped paying attention to them. And it was painful. It came with no explanation, you know, because obviously in a family where they're not talking about sex, the father's not going to say, my dear, I'm pushing you away now because of my own sexuality. I'm so uptight about it. Like, I don't want to talk to you anymore. So how could parents shift that, and how did you shift that?
Well, this is a huge issue. Just from the larger societal standpoint, we're living at a time of great hysteria right now about adults and kids and sexuality. And the one thing that I would say about that is that from the beginning of time, men are programmed to be sexually interested in girls once they reach puberty and their bodies start to change. They start to menstruate. men are attracted to young girls. But you can't say that out loud, because in this day and age, you know, if you're a man, you can't be attracted to a young girl until she turns 18. And then it's magically okay on her 18th birthday. But I mean, the reality is men find 12, 13-year-old girls attractive. But if you can't put that in perspective, then all of a sudden your daughter hits that age, then you do have questions about, oh my gosh, how could I be attracted to, not that they're it would be an extreme case for them to actually be attracted to their daughters, but if they're attracted to other young girls and their daughters hit that moment, it throws a switch. And men can close down. And it's the worst thing you can do, because you're not sexually attracted to your daughter. You can look at your daughter and say, she's beautiful. She has a beautiful body. But that's like a movie critic saying just what it is. That's different than being turned on sexually to your kids. So what that dad wants to do, should do, isn't closed down, but that's a time, you know, keep those hugs coming and keep those cheek kisses coming and keep all this good juice and talk about sexuality and love for all your kids and cuddling and being playful. Keep all that in place, absolutely every bit of it. And none of that indicates that you are sexually turned on to your own kids.
Thanks for answering that, Craig. I've often wondered about that. I mean, that's like a huge question, so I appreciate that. We're going to stop here for a moment. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about other misconceptions, and then I have a few questions up my sleeve for you, because it's rare that I get to speak to somebody who's as knowledgeable as you are about kids and sex and parents. So this is really great. You're listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm talking to Craig Hallenstein, and he is a psychologist and a writer and father of five. And he has a weekly blog that you should check out if you're a parent. It's called KidsAndSexBlog.com. We'll be right back.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Lori Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Lori Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com. for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
Well, we're back with Sex and Happiness, and today I'm speaking with Craig Hallenstein, and I'm having a great conversation with him about how parents need to educate their kids about sex and how it's really important. In the last segment, we talked about fathers not pulling away from their daughters when their daughters reach puberty. That's probably the time that their daughters need them the most. I, as a daughter, can actually say something about this. So that's what we were just talking about. You know, what else are some of the misconceptions, Craig, that you've run across with parents?
I think the biggest centers around the word innocence. I hear so many parents say, we haven't had the talk yet. They're still hung up on one talk versus an ongoing dialogue. We haven't had the talk yet because I just want little Johnny or little Susan to be innocent as long as possible. And every time I hear that, I kind of pull my hair a little bit. I'm surprised I have hair left, because kids are sexual from the moment of conception. Kids don't become sexual at puberty. I mean, from the moment that the egg and the sperm meet up and there's this little explosion and there's cells dividing and there's all this remarkable growth, that's sexual. And then the fetus is slip sliding around in the best water park they'll ever spend their time in. You might also look at it as just a great hot tub. And on sonograms, we see fetuses touching their genitals, and they're having a great time. It isn't until they come out of mom and we slap diapers on them so they can't touch themselves any longer that, you know, we try to close some of that down. But these kids are sexual from conception. And Freud got it wrong when he talked about a latency period during what would be a latter part of grade school, where supposedly kids stopped being interested in sex for a few years because they were working on building friendships. And what in fact happened that Freud missed was that by the time kids got that age in the repressive Victorian culture, they had learned that if they continued to play doctor and do those kinds of things, they were going to get in a lot of trouble. So they just hid it better for those three or four years, and then it all comes back. But there's no point in kids' lives when they're not teeming with sexuality. Their bodies feel good. Their skin feels good. They're excited by the things that they see around them. Amara Charles has a wonderful little line she uses about taking Native American kids, indigenous kids, out into the woods and just observing nature, and pointing out that when the wind blows across the leaves, that's sex. And when the sun beats down and kisses the flowers, that's what sex is all about.
Yes, Amara's been the guest on my show, and she actually talked about that. We talked a lot about that, and we've both been on a panel together. I moderated the panel, and then it's one of my shows where we talk about sex and teens, how to explain that stuff to teens, which we both have a passion about. So it's great. You know, look, people are sexual their whole lives and they don't know it. They shut down so much, they let themselves dry up. What you're speaking about here is that people are sexual from conception all the way through.
Right.
And I assert that if they continue to be sexual well into their age and aging stages of life, they'll live a whole lot longer, mm-hmm. a whole lot happier, and their cells will be nourished. And their brains will be nourished with oxytocins and other cocktails that get produced in sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's overall great for the body and great for us. It's just a question of how suppressed and repressed we've come to be in our culture. We're worse than the Puritans who founded at least the Americas.
Yeah, we're still right in the middle of all of that. Things have gotten a little bit better. But we're still fighting, you know, the battles around abstinence-only education, sex education. Here's kind of a little hierarchy for you of sex education types. At the base is abstinence-only, where you provide very little information, very few choices for kids. This is how it is, and you need to wait until you're married. And then a step up from that is fear-based sex education, which provides a little more information and more choices, but everything's tied to, yeah, but it's going to kill you. You know, where you scare kids to death around pregnancy and diseases. And then the next step up the chain is values-based sex education. And here there's more information provided, more choices, and here's where parents start to bring in their values, but they give some space to the kids to develop their own values around the choices. And then the highest level that I believe in, I call it joy-based sex education, where you always lead with enthusiasm. And basically, what you say to kids is I started every sexual conversation with my kids by saying, again, sex is wonderful. Sex is going to be just a major part of your life, and you're going to love it. Now, here are some of the things that I think are important about that and some of the challenges that you're going to face. So it was important to talk about things like pregnancy and disease and your reputation and you're wanting to feel good in the morning after making decisions, but you don't have to bring those things up from a heavy-handed fear standpoint. You just say, here are the things you're going to have to learn about so that when you become much more involved as a sexual being, you're going to be able to derive the most amount of pleasure with the least amount of problems. And that's joy-based sex education.
I kind of feel like that's what my father was trying to do when he said, you know, don't make it the best thing and don't make it the worst thing, but make sure that you're responsible about it. I feel like that was his best shot at that. And I agree with you. I think it's great. They have to be educated about what could go wrong. And the same token, you want to balance that with how right it is, how important it is, how life-affirming it is. So it's great. What about, I know that a lot of parents, their sexuality changes when they have a child. A lot of people come to me and they say, well, our sex life was great until we procreated. Once we had a child, we felt uptight. We had to be quiet in the bedroom. So what do you tell kids about the noises that mommy and daddy make in the bedroom?
I did a blog on that.
I
say go for it. As long as you're not screaming things that are frightening, you don't want to make frightening sounds coming from down the hall and screaming obscenities and that kind of thing. But certainly to have your breathing increase and allow some joyful sound to be heard, I think that's a wonderful thing. We don't have to hide when our kids are born. We don't have to hide our sexuality at all. You know, it needs to be something that's talked about. Mom and I want to go spend some time together. We want to go love each other and watch some TV for a while.
Or you're going to hear noises coming out of the room. And we can see, I tell people when we do emotional release techniques that it's great to involve their kids so their kids don't get frightened by whatever they might need to yell out. And so they might also need to yell things out during sex, because sex is a time when people actually heal themselves from traumas and things. So I like it when kids are included in the, you know, kids are free to yell and scream, and they can know also that their mom and dad are yelling and screaming.
Yeah, we think that little kids are so fragile, but they're just not. We need to provide healthy context for kids and not be so concerned that they're going to do something or see something. Or got to get past that. Kids are far less fragile than you think, and kids are just, remember, kids are little people walking through the kitchen, and there's sex going on with those kids. Their bodies are alive. And so they've got a sexual thing going on, and they're as curious as they'll ever be in their lives about everything. So to go around hiding stuff from kids is crazy. And I think too, that kids are, if you pretend that sex doesn't exist, when kids know that their friends, all they talk about is sex. Kids know that sex is great because their friends talk about it nonstop and because their parents keep doing it. So they know sex is terrific. But if you pretend like it doesn't exist, or you pretend like there's something wrong with it, but you keep doing it, then you're hypocritical. And kids sense that at age 4. So you have to say sex is great. And then you're on their side, and they feel like they're on your side, and everybody's looking at this stuff from the standpoint of the world makes sense.
Well, Craig, thanks. This is great. That was really great advice. And we're going to take a break in this moment. When we come back, I have some other questions to ask you. I particularly, because we've been talking about heterosexual parents like mom and dad, but in the next segment, I want to ask you about gay parents, same-sex parents, or parents who are in different kind of formulations, like polyamorous parents, or parents who are in threesomes or foursomes or whatever. What? How do they educate their kids about sex, given that they're in different configurations? So just hang on there for a minute. We'll come right back to that.
Okay.
If you You're listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers, and today we're talking about sex education for kids, one of my favorite topics, and I'm joined by Craig Hallenstein. So please stay tuned with us. We're going to talk about different configurations and some of the other kind of subjects that I've dealt with on the show, how you then deal with that with kids. So we'll be right back.
Are you in pain or unable to sleep? Ever hear about how the body needs glutathione for natural cleansing? Could you use a boost of energy? Try Life Wave Patches. There are a variety of patches to choose from. Each one of them is designed like a small band-aid to help your body with the challenges of life when you're simply not getting what the body needs for support. And you can use these amazing patches on your pets. Go to Life Wave Patches for Pets and People on Facebook and see Suzanne Summers' interview with Dr. David Schmidt about patches that reduce stress and inflammation while increasing energy. You can also find out more at ValerieHandlers.com. That's ValerieHandlers.com. Or call Valerie at 714-928-6399 to order your patches or consider becoming an independent Life Wave distributor. That's 714-928-6399.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Lori talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Lori's CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Lori is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Lori sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn CD by Lori Handlers, go to www.butterflyworkshops.com right now.
This is Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness, and today I'm talking about sex and kids, how you educate kids about sex. And my guest today is Craig Hallenstein, who is a psychologist. He's a father of five. He writes a weekly blog about kids and sex. And so far, he's doing really well in terms of the answers he's giving me about the questions. But Craig, I got to pose to you because I've had so many different varieties of turn-on on this show. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had people who are into bondage and domination and sadomasochism, and I've been dominating, and then I've had people on this show who are into polyamory and who are bisexual and sure. Trisexual and every kind of thing. Because, and I also feel like it's funny that those things come out more. The more suppression we have, the more people find creative ways to deal with their sexuality, the more kink there is, the more whatever. So sure. If you're kinky parents,
mm-hmm.
or if you're same gender parents, how much more challenging is it for you to explain this kind of stuff to kids?
Well, I love this question. This is a great question. There are two ways to look at kids when they're born. One is that they're blank slates. And they're just clay that I want to mold in my image. I was a football player, and I want my kids to be football players.
Isn't that called tabula rasa?
Yeah. But that's not a healthy way to look at kids, because we end up trying to slam our lives and our expectations down their throats. The healthy way is when a child comes out of mom, you take one look at them and you say, wow, who are you? And you start with that question, and you take the next 50 years getting an answer. And they tell you who they are, and you celebrate who they are. And they're not us. We don't own them. They're not carbon copies of us. But there's so much delight to be found as they reveal themselves to us over months, years, decades. So getting to your question, if a child comes to you and says, I'm gay, my belief is that's another reason to celebrate, because they've just made an amazing discovery. They've shared that with us. We're on the same team, and we need to embrace that and be excited that they've discovered something else about themselves. The biggest downside to most parents when they learn that one of their kids self-identifies as gay is that a lot of their expectations are being shattered in that moment. You know, we won't have the big wedding, we won't have grandchildren, whatever their expectations are. But that's still holding on to that tabula rasa idea, where we have expectations for our kids, as opposed to just loving the celebration as they make discoveries and share those discoveries with us over the years.
Well, my question for you was really not that, though. I love what you said, because I happen to have a sister who's gay, and my parents' dreams were shattered, so to speak. And I said to them one day, you know, you're so ridiculous, because she's great, and everyone who meets her feels that she's great. They don't ask her about her sexual preference. They just love her for who she is. And if you don't get to know her and love her for who she is before you leave this planet, you're going to be really sorry. And they stepped up. But my question for you was really, no, what if the parents are gay, or what if the parents have some fetish or they're kinky? How do they explain that to their kids? Because the kids are bound to, like, I have a friend whose daughter and her friends found handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, what do you do about that?
Yeah, the one thing that I think you don't need to go into with kids are the details of our sex lives, who our partners are, we don't need to paint a picture of everything that we do in bed. But besides that, you can share anything with your kids over time. If you're into kink, your kids are going to know that by the time the kids reach adolescence. You're not going to hide that from them. Or if you're involved in swinging clubs, you're not going to hide that from them. I mean, you might at first, but eventually they'll know that. But if you're loving parents and you have a great relationship with them, and you don't pry all that much into what they're doing, you're just there as a support, they're not going to be prying that much into what you're doing. And then eventually you'll find that the kids will start teasing you about your handcuffs. And that's all part of the fun, too, is that, you kind of tease each other a little bit back and forth. That indicates wonderful relationships. As far as polyamory goes, Harold Bissell, who wrote the parent book, used to say, especially in this world where so many marriages break up, all a kid really needs to become emotionally mature is to have one really strong, loving, emotionally mature parent. In the case of polyamory, they have 3 or 4 or 15. It's more love. Polyamory is based around the concept of more love. And I think kids really benefit from those situations.
So it's like a little private mini kibbutz,
yeah,
that where all the parents raise all the children, you're saying.
Yeah.
And then in gay couples, like two men together or two women together, like how do they describe sex to children who they don't know yet if they're heterosexual or homosexual, but they say you have two moms or you have two fathers? So have you had any experience with that?
Yeah, and I think the sexual conversations are very mainstream. Questions do come up about, well, how do two men, but not very frequently, because, you know, the kids are like, the kids don't initiate a lot of those conversations. I don't know that gay parents are getting into a lot of the specifics of what they're doing in bed or how appropriate that even needs to be. But the mechanics are there. I mean, gay people know what sex is all about.
Well, I'm asking because it's it's, you know, when you said you're talking to the child, I mean, when they're, once they're conceived and they're still in the belly and whatever, but it, that's in a very straight relationship. If two men adopt a child, or that there's been an impregnation on the part of them to a woman, and they're not always with that woman, and they don't get to do those kinds of things, but then the child comes and then they want to just talk about fun sex and everything, it's different. It's obviously different, and it feels to me like they have to have the same kind of candor and authenticity that you're speaking about, and yet they also have to say, you know, not the whole rest of the world is like this.
Yeah, but I think it's much more similar than you're suggesting.
Okay, good.
I think there are little tiny differences and nuances, but mostly you're going to love the kids. You're going to talk about how wonderful sex is. Here are the areas that you need to be. You need to learn how to get on top of. You know, we express ourselves sexually. You know, Joe and me, Joe and Bob, we express ourselves sexually, but as two men, by touching. We like the touch of skin and what, you know, the stuff that kids should be hearing, the loving conversations. There's one other thing that I wanted to mention around abstinence, because I think that this is really important. I don't like abstinence only sex education, but I think to suggest to kids that they abstain from, I always said, oral sex and intercourse. I used to suggest to my kids, you know, between now that you're 8 years old, between now and about the age of 18, those are two things that I think you should wait on. And there are other ways to express yourself sexually between now and then, but I think you should wait, because by the time you reach about the age of 18, you're going to be able to handle things like wounded reputations, be able to avoid things like that, and be able to handle avoiding pregnancies and diseases. So I'd like to see you wait a little bit on that. But between now and then, we'll talk about some of the things that you can do to be sexual. So, and I found with my own kids, by putting that message out over and over again, they waited and waited and waited, because I think they were having fun in other ways. They had permission. I always told them from the earliest ages, when you're ready for sex, come to mom and me and we'll make sure that you have protection. It's your choice. It's not our choice. But what I'd like for you to do is wait until you're about 18, because I think you can really handle intercourse and oral sex at that point. And they did.
It's so natural the way you're speaking about it. It's really, it's impressive, and it's actually inspiring as well. So thank you for doing that. Thanks for doing what you do.
You're welcome. I'm happy.
Yeah. I'm glad. Well, we're just kind of at the top of the hour here. So I want to thank you so much, Craig, for coming on my show today. If you'd like to get more information about Craig Hollenstein, please go to this blog, kidsandsexblog.com, and you will find sex positive guidance for all of you, for your parenting skills and how to raise kids to be sexually healthy adults, which Craig has just really described to us. So Craig, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Lori.
Yeah, what a pleasure. I'm waiting for those books. I can't wait for your books to come out. We'll have you back on the show. Yeah, keep me posted. Okay, everybody, thank you so much for listening today. I want to thank my sponsors, HormoneNurse.com and Valerie Handlers and LifeWave Patches, and also, of course, Zestra. And please tune in next time when I'll be speaking to people about how food and having an eating healthy lifestyle and an exercise healthy lifestyle help you really have better sex and happiness. So tune in next time. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make-